Thanks for listening today. We've got the G&J B Show. Today it's episode 3. Welcome, Jacko.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. Who we got in today?
We got Shara Roma, Commonwealth Games coach, and coach down here at the boxing shop as well. Would you like to introduce yourself, Shara?
G'day, fellas. How you going?
Good, thanks, mate.
Great, thank you.
So we've just got a few questions for you today, Shara, and we want to know a little bit about your sporting journey and how you got into boxing and involved in coaching as well.
You want to start it? Tell us how you started about your sporting life as a kid.
So I pretty much grew up in a family playing cricket winter and summer, and I followed that around with three older brothers, and they also played a bit of soccer amongst that when we were younger. So I pretty much said to my dad, I want to play cricket. He said, no, you're not allowed.
You're a girl?
Because you're a girl. And I was like, okay.
So you chose boxing. Nice.
No. So I then went, okay, well, if I can't play that, I'll play softball. So I chose to play softball. And that journey started, I think, when I was about 11 or 12. So I just went from there, represented club level, represented state level, was in a under 19 state squad when I was about 16 or 17, and the journey went from there.
Yeah, nice. So up until you're 11 and 12 or whenever you started your softball, did you play sport or you were just dragged around the cricket fields pretty much?
I got dragged around the cricket fields most of the time and just did what I did. Yeah, threw the cricket ball around, picked up the bat, and we played a fair bit of backyard cricket and used to get pretty
competitive.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that. We got a bat and chopped it in half, and so I could use it. And then we used to tape the ball, and there'd be bounces flying at my head and at my body. And the boys just thought, my brothers thought it was funny just to peg the ball at me. It was a bit of body line going on, but we had fun.
So I hear not much has changed. I hear I was talking to Rocco and he said you still use the half bat in the backyard because you still can't reach the top. Oh, is that right?
Nah, not quite.
Fancy yourself as a bowler or a batsman?
Probably more of a batsman, Jacko.
Bats person, yeah.
I'd change my language.
Do you in a game of cricket, mate? So
we have had a few games of backyard cricket around the Bowen household, and I believe you dropped a ball when Jono chased you with the bat. So I think I wrecked myself.
You got someone like Jono chasing you with the bat. I think you dropped the ball and saved your life, didn't you?
No, you're gonna take the catch. Get the mitts out.
Catches win matches, eh?
That's it.
So I believe after that you played a bit of soccer, a bit of social soccer, or was it mainly social, or did you get right into your soccer? Or?
I played second and third division soccer, so it was very competitive. Anything I do is always very competitive, so even if I was playing 7th division soccer, I'd still be very competitive at that level.
Aiming to win?
Correct.
So, obviously, whether the listeners know or not, you've had an illness from an early age. Are you happy to touch base on what happened from your young age? So it's diabetes, okay? You've been type 1 diabetic from 3 years old.
Yep.
Give us that story that we don't know about, how it started. How did you know? Did you just go for a general checkup and you were a diabetic, or what happened?
So when I was 3, I was drinking a lot of water, wetting the bed, like grabbing a cup, going into the bathroom like every half hour and just drinking. I just remember I'd drink and then I'd be thirsty again and I'd just keep drinking. And then at night I'd be wetting the bed, always going to the toilet. And my mum picked up on it because she was at home. She'd broken her ankle because my brother set the laundry on fire, and we had internal staircases. So the laundry was on fire. Mum went flying down the stairs, broke her ankle. And little do we know, to this day we know he started that fire because he was having a bloody cigarette in there. And but lucky she broke her ankle because she picked up on me just, you know, having these bad habits and took me to the doctor and they said, get her straight into hospital, she's a diabetic. So from there, we went to the hospital. The very first memory I can ever remember is lying in a massive ward, like old school ward with probably about 20 beds, and the smell of Vegemite and Milo every night for supper. And I probably stayed there for about a week until they stabilised me and gave mum lessons on how to give me injections and how to test blood sugars. And then after that week, it might even have been two, they said, look, you can take her home. And they showed her how to inject me with an orange. So they'd give mum a needle and put the needle into the orange and how to draw back and push the insulin into the body. And so we went home and my second oldest brother, the one that set the laundry on fire.
What's his name?
Justin.
Good.
Name and shame.
Yeah. Give it to him. Has he owned up to it to this day?
Oh, yeah, no, he owned up. It was years on. We were all older and he said, oh, that was actually me having a cigarette. But, yeah. Anyway, we get home and he's standing there and he goes, and because it used to take about four of them to hold me down to have a needle because I was just shit scared of it. Like, he goes, look, it's easy. And he shoved one in his bum. And then he pulled it out and all this blood started coming out. I'm like, oh, so it scared me even more. It was trying to help, but it didn't help. But, it was tough, but I think it's tougher if I had turned to be a diabetic when I was older. It's because if I was older, I would have known a different life. But just being younger, it was just the life it was. I had to weigh my food. I had to count everything I ate. It was similar to boxing.
You know what's funny? It's not funny at all, obviously, but we've had a few diabetics at this gym and it's, you know, prior to meeting you and you as diabetes, I wouldn't have known what diabetes was, to be honest. I wouldn't have really known what to do. And, you know, obviously we've had quite a few, but Braden, I remember Braden Nan had to deal with trying to box. Remember, he was only a young fella and he was getting anxious and his levels were up and down. It was only you could really control it, because I had no idea what to do.
Well, stress changes a diabetic's blood sugar levels. That stress can play a big time havoc in their lives. And boxing is a hard thing to try and level out before bouts and even after. When you get stressed sometimes or you're elevated like that before about, it makes your insulin levels go higher. So, I mean, your blood sugar levels go higher, so you sort of get a pasty mouth. And then afterwards, it can just fall away quickly and you end up having a diabetic episode. It's a fine line. People do it. But you have to be monitored quite closely.
And that'd be the same for maybe the weight cuts as well. Would they go really high and low? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I know for me, I had a handful of fights and I could only go to 60 kilos because that's as far.
Yeah.
And just for the safety of what I was doing, I wasn't happy to one, put myself at more risk in a ring, being at a lighter weight and just fatigued and couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And if something happened, like that, you know, it's not worth it.
Especially with kids and everything else plays a part.
So what I was just thinking then, just if any other people are having a sporting life, and especially boxing, because that's what we do, and kids think they can't do it. Well, they can, but you'd be happy with chat with these kids and these people, wouldn't you? You know, to help control their diabetes as much as possible.
Oh, look, everyone's different, but if they were to start boxing, you'd have to have a very good relationship with your specialist because they play a part of it. Like, you can't just go, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a boxer and be a diabetic. There's responsibilities on your behalf as a diabetic because it doesn't work. Like, I know one day I said to myself, oh, you know what, I'm not a diabetic anymore, and decided not to take my insulin.
How old were you then?
I think I was 13, so I was playing softball, 13 or 14.
Thought you were too cool to be a diabetic, pretty much. Look, was that I did, just over it?
Mate, years of insulin and, yeah, and testing yourself.
Needles,
and,
every, and, how many and, needles a day do you take?
Well, now I'm 4, but back then would have been 2 because it was different.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying it's a sob story, but it is. It's an autoimmune disease. Mm. And at the end of the day, if you don't look after yourself, well, you can lose a toe, you can use a leg, you know, anything can happen. It's hard because you're trying to balance what's happening in the body. Mm. But as I was saying, at that age, I was just, you know, had enough, that's it. And I remember mum and dad went over to New Zealand and my brothers, I think it was just my brothers at home, and I was like, yeah, because I was taking my own insulin that time. And I said, you know what, not having it. And so mum and dad were away for 2 weeks, and by the end of that 2 weeks they came back, and I just remember I was probably 6 kilos down, because what happens, the body, the acid eats away at your muscles, and you just drop weight. And I just remember dad coming in, they came back from the airport, and mum and dad looking at me, and dad just picked me up and
face sunken in,
and just went, we got to go to hospital. And all I remember is I was half in and out of consciousness. I just remember the rain dropping on my head when dad carried me out to the car. And then I don't remember after that. So I had a week in intensive care. And then I woke up to my mum praying at the end of my bed saying, you know, well, Shara, you're lucky to be alive. And I was like, what? And it sounds bad, but I was sitting there going, geez, I could have a bloody meat pie. Jim. I was so hungry because the body was repairing, and I was
4 and 20.
Yeah, well, I was coming back to my normal self, but I didn't realise how much of a serious situation I'd nearly died and I'd put myself in, like, without really. It wasn't that I wanted to die. It was just I didn't even know. I just had enough.
Know the extent
of what it, what it just to. Led to that. So
we touched a little bit on your time as an athlete and your early childhood. Do you want to talk a little bit about your coaching experience, and was it only just boxing you've coached, or have you coached cricket or softball or anything else?
No, it's just boxing.
Just boxing?
But my dad comes from a big coaching background, so he had a lot to do with Queensland cricket.
Yep.
And I think I learnt a lot of what he used to say and just apply it to boxing. Yeah. I mean, to me, every sport, it's the same. It's the same.
Yeah. You say he's been a big mentor for you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Like, even how he brought me up is what I expect in a gym or what I expect from my athletes.
Yeah. Do you want to go through some of those, like... I know Gareth spoke a bit about Paul last week and his father and the influence he had. Do you want to speak a little bit about his influence on your coaching? And like what values he's taught you, or what skills and disciplines to teach kids?
Well, like I listened to Gareth last week, and I can relate to him saying about Paul teaching him left and right, because I used to play third base and I'm a left-hander.
Yeah.
And being on third base... when you're left-handed, you have to turn and actually throw to first base. But if you're right-handed, you can pick the ball up and throw straight away.
Yeah.
So he said to me, well, if you're going to play third base, Shara, you're going to have to learn how to throw right-handed. And I was like, okay. So he had me out the back just throwing right-handed after right after right. And I got great at it, but I wasn't as good as my left hand. And so I just said to Dad, you know what? I'm going to play third base, and I'm going to be left-handed, but I'm going to be better at everyone else who's right-handed. And he just went, yep, no problem. So he moved on with that, and I moved on with that, and I was successful. But it wasn't what he taught me. It was what I listened to at the dinner table when he spoke to my brothers about cricket.
Yeah.
I do distinctly remember him saying, boys, it's perfect practice. It's not the quantity, it's the quality that you're doing. and, you know, things like if your heart and soul isn't into it, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
You know, and not being lazy, you know, you got two arms, legs and a heartbeat, do it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's what I say to some of the kids now I've got in here. You know, you've got opportunities. Like, some people can't even walk.
Yeah.
And you're here whinging.
Yeah, that's what me and Gareth spoke about as well. Just like other countries, just the things they have to go through day to day. And we're so privileged here in life and in our bodies and stuff as well. Like, we can do what we want to. You just got to apply yourself and have that work ethic.
You've got to. I remember when you were coaching at first, and there was somewhere where I couldn't be there one day, and we had I think your first coaching.
Oh, I remember that.
Your first coaching job by yourself. You were chucked in the ring with a kid you didn't even know, who was a heavyweight from Nauru,
and he couldn't speak English. He could not speak English.
Jump in at the deep end. So, that's how you either sink or swim. It wasn't the second guy, it was Jayco.
Gareth's gone I can't be there, but look, you'll look up, you'll be right. So yeah, no worries. We got the Nauru team, you know, you've seen them. I was, yeah, no worries. This guy, I'd never seen him in my life. Like, you coach Shara? I said, yes. And I said, okay.
That was about his extent of English.
No, that wasn't him. That was the interpreter.
Oh, right.
So he goes, yeah. So I'm in the corner. No, first I'm doing pads. I've got the interpreter. I had to say to the interpreter what to throw so that then the athlete knew what to throw. And okay, all right, we'll handle that. He's warmed up. We get in the corner.
You didn't get hit that whole pad session?
No.
No, you did, all right.
Could have done, yeah, by everyone.
Right? So we get in the corner. I've taken the interpreter with me. He's interpreting and telling old mate in the corner what to do. Next minute, he was losing. And I'm like, oh God, I've got to throw the towel in. Like, you know, this is bad. Anyway, next minute, they're backed over into the corner closest to us. And his arms got wrapped around the rope.
Oh, real.
And he can't throw his arm. And his opponent's just banging down him. And yeah. I remember Saru Whippy was there. And Saru's called stop, a couple of times. And I've thrown the towel in. The towel in got stuck on his arm that was stuck around the ring.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway, Saru jumped in and we untangled it. And then I'm like, oh, mate, I didn't know what to do. I was just like, oh, well, I tried to throw the towel in. Anyway.
It's all up from there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, did it went up. Old mate won.
Oh, did he?
He won because the other mate got disqualified for hitting him. With his... So I was like...
Oh, yeah. First win. I'll take that.
First in, first win with a super heavy that couldn't speak English from Nauru. Great.
Well, that's where it started.
Just for anyone who wanted to know, I had my first coaching experience the other week too.
Oh, yeah.
I just gave water and took out the mouth guard, and I reckon I was more nervous doing that than I am when I actually fight.
You know, he asked me at least three times, which side do I need to get up on?
Yeah, because
which side?
And then she's going, you've got to go out and you're going to take it out with your left hand and put it back in. I was like, man, how am I going to do that and give him water at the same time?
Totally confused.
It's a different world. So obviously things went on from there. We got the, you know, quite a decent club. We do a lot of kids work and everything. But you, I know you wanted to progress your career and try and go as high as you can go. And, you know, I suppose by that time I'd decided to step back from national duties as well. And you really stepped up and moved on and made a good relationship with athletes and coaches at the Australian Institute of Sport and on the national team. And I remember us sort of, you had to fly around and get some education and, you know, build your career and learn off many different coaches all over the world. And, you know, so that, and then eventually you got the opportunity to, you know, to go to the Olympic Games and work with Shelley Watts. And, you know, what an athlete she was. She was excellent. She's been a really good, I believe Shelley's been a really good role model for, you know, kids in the sport to look up to and achieve. So tell us about a bit about pathway, how that sort of happened, getting into that Olympic system and that sort of stuff.
Well, I just, I just set some goals and said, you know what, I've just got to jump in. And I remember, I think it might have been a nationals in Perth, and I was the only female coach there. And someone from, I don't know where, came and said, oh, I really want to do an interview with you. Like, you're the only woman here. And I said, oh, really? I actually didn't really notice until he said that, because for myself, I just consider myself just like everyone else.
Yeah,
like,
I guess, as you've said, you've been involved in like male-dominated sports in your life as well, so you probably wouldn't have thought twice about it, would you?
I didn't. And growing up with three brothers, well, I was probably more of a tomboy than a you know, let's go get my nails painted. But so I went headfirst into doing that, and I pretty much came back. I got a national champion that year.
Yeah.
And I came back and I just said to Gareth, you know, this is it. I'm going to have a crack. And to be honest, I just put myself out there. I just worked hard. And the more I worked hard, the more doors I was opening up and walking through, and people were starting to notice that I was putting myself out there. And I think if you can't whinge as a woman if you don't put yourself out there. But you've also got to realise that you've got to be the same as the men. You've got to be working hard and having athletes. You've got to get the same accolades as the men. Otherwise, why would you be picked? Like, you wouldn't go for a job and there's a male on one side and you on the other. They've got all the credentials. You've got half and expect to get the job.
Yeah, you've got to do the time.
You can't call it bias if you don't get it.
Yeah, you've got to do the work. And it's tough. Like, don't get me wrong, I sacrificed at least 4 or 5 years of seeing my kids grow up. You know, there were times where I travelled for 12 weeks of the year. So you sacrifice, and as a female, it could be a bit more than a male, because you're missing, you know, that mother-daughter time or mother-son time that, you know, happens. And not that I regret any of it, but it was to pursue a dream for me, which I made. And that would be the same with any athlete. Like Shelley, she pretty much sacrificed a whole lot, and I've got to give it to her. Like, she was one of the most mentally tough women I've seen in this sport. And what got me was, you know, she used to carry this dream board everywhere, and it had pictures of just what she dreamt of. And she always used to have visualization of her standing there with a gold medal, or her standing there winning, her standing there with a hand up in the middle of the ring. Now, that's a part, that's a massive part of winning, is to being able to see it.
Yeah. And you know what? A lot of people, now you tell that story about Shelley Watts with the dream, we should have a chat with Shelley and get and explain about that. That'd be excellent to hear about that. But you talk about that, and before Shelley actually won the Commonwealth Games gold or actually represented a country at the Olympics and Commonwealth Games, you know, if people had heard about this story, they would have thought she was a lunatic. Do you know what I mean? Carry this dream board around.
Yeah.
But it's not now, it's a great story. But, and that's what, remember we said about kids with social media the other day? You know what? Just live it. Just say what you're doing. Just do what you want to do. You have to.
And that comes, we spoke about that
the
other day and touched on just putting yourself out there. And that's what Shara's touched on. If you're not, you know, if you're not willing to do the work and put yourself out there, there's
no expect
point.
Anything.
Yeah. And like that comes with its criticisms along the way, but you just gotta.
Oh, look!
I'm sure you would have had that along the way as well.
Mate, not everyone's good. You're not everyone's cup of tea.
Any funny stories about Shelley Watts? And the I'm sure there'd be a few. Are you allowed to say them?
Any funny stories? Oh.
About any of the girls' crews that you've been on with? I don't know. Kay Scott. Any of those girls? Sky. I'm sure there's a few.
Oh, there's a lot of mishaps that have happened.
Who's the lunatic out of the squad? The girls that you've taken, or is somebody that shit happens to them all the time, and you go, oh, here we go, something's happened to her again, or Or is that you?
Is it you?
Is it you?
No.
Well, what about the injuries? Getting knocked over in the Philippines.
Well, look, Kat has 9 lives. I've used about 20 of them.
Most of them on the scooters.
Look, all the girls, they're professional in what they do, and look, hats off to them because they're living the dream. They're sacrificing exactly what I've sacrificed. Look, the whole sport, whether you're a coach, whether you're an athlete, anyone, we all sacrifice. Whether you're an RNJ, you sacrifice.
Yeah.
It is the sport, you know, and we wouldn't do it if we didn't love it. Like, I wouldn't do it. Like, so many times I've gone, that's it, that's enough. But I can't. I've got some love, undying love in this sport. And the undying love goes to a level of, geez, it'd be great to medal at an Olympics so we could actually build this sport to be one of the best sports in Australia rather than, you know, rugby league or soccer or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's you have a real passion for representing Australia and getting people on the stage? Or I know Gareth spoke last week about he gets more of a thrill from just running his local shows and having some of the boys and girls that come through the club. Do you get a bigger feeling out of maybe, say, someone you've worked closer with or people on the Australian team and representing your country?
Look, I have to say there's two split feelings in that.
Yeah.
The feeling I get when I'm in my gym and I start to get results, that feeling's the best feeling ever because I know I cop a lot of criticism that I've done all this travel, but who is she coaching? Well, you know what? I've been traveling for 5 years, haven't even been in my gym for 5 years properly. So who do I get to coach? Well, no one, but I've been in here for a good solid 6 months now, and I love seeing the kids and I love seeing the people that trust me and know that I'm a good coach to help them. But then, you know, when I went to Comm Games on the world stage, I couldn't beat that.
That was like the highlight.
It's a personal, but that's the personal. But the other side I'm talking about in my gym is for the other people.
Yeah.
I feel great for them.
Yeah.
But being at Comm Games and seeing the girls medal and being in camp with them, having such a relationship with them over the past 4 or 5 years, it's massive. You can't not. Like I've known Skye since she was little.
Yeah.
I can't not have a feeling with Skye when she won that gold medal, like it was a relief.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of pressure, the home girl. And
yeah.
In the lead up, there was the posters made about her and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, like, it's, you know what? We've known the Nicholson family I've known Alan and Pat for 20 years. I remember Skye singing the national anthem when she was 6 years old. There you go, Skye, you better listen to this. And I know you'll give me a bit of backlash on that, but you know, they've had a rough trot. We know, everybody knows about what the Nicholses have been through in the past with the unfortunate passing of Gavin and Jamie. It was a great moment to see Alan and Pat smile, you know what I mean, when Scott won that gold medal. And to me, from the outside, that was, and being close to their family, to me, that's what that was all about.
I think it was, but I think also for Skye personally. Because I remember Skye and I, we went over to go get our hair done one day because they had a hairdresser.
Getting dolled up, mate.
Oh, yeah, mate, on camp, you had everything. You have
the gold medal. You need
to. You had everything.
No, I haven't done that one.
You had everything in the village. So we were over there and we were waiting before it opened, and I was talking to her, a bit of a heart to heart, and I said, you know, remember the stage she went through and she was getting fat. Sorry, Skye, but you were. We even looked at photos. But, you know, she was at 64. She wasn't putting in at training. And, you know, just... And then she said, I just realised that for me to win, I have to be 100%. I have to give it 100%. And it's like some athletes just have that penny drop and go, you know what?
I have to do it.
It's crunch time. I'm gonna do it. And you know, she was 17, 18 around that time, and she just made that decision and never looked back. Yeah. And people can say whatever they want about Skye, but I know mentally Skye now is 10 times better than what she was when she was 15.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. There was also another great story out of that Games with Anya. Tell us about what happened to Anya in the
Poor old Anya.
The trials, yeah. And her knee and all that sort of stuff. What a story. And then, yeah, I know you got pretty close to Anya, and Joel Keegan is another great coach from down New South Wales as well. And
yeah, definitely.
Give us a bit of story on that.
I felt for Anya because all our camp, Anya had no time in our camp with us. So it was really tough to, get close to Anya. But I tried my best via messages and everything. She actually did her knee in the, I think it was before
the Australian Championships or not.
Yeah.
I think she'd done it previous
and
to
so
the,
she boxed,
the trial. So
she boxed with it in. I think she, what did she do? Had a,
Live update, Gareth nearly fell off a chair.
Yeah, he did. Sorry.
I'm bad.
I can't remember the operation she actually had.
She did the ACL.
ACL. So she had done her ACL and was boxing in the final at Nationals and won it. We did not see Anya at all for lead up to Com Games. She was in the AIS 110% physio, everything she could to bring her knee back to normal before the games. So when I saw Anya, it was our multi-nations camp at the Institute before we went into the village. And
so would that have been like 2 weeks before?
Two weeks before.
Yeah.
Had done a little bit of sparring, but not a lot. And so we had sparring days, and I just said to Anya, look, Anya, like, her timing was off, everything. You know, you've been out for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so your timing was out and whatever else.
Yeah, dead bloke's cartilage.
In your knee.
ACL,
right?
In your own knee, yeah, I think.
And so I said to her, look, all you got to do is start with your basic punches, get your distance right, and things will flow off that. And, you know, there was a little time where she'd get frustrated and everything, but you would, and that was understandable. And then all of a sudden, she just started grabbing the momentum and things started just falling into place. And I just kept encouraging her to just keep pushing on and keep trying the things that Joel's been working with her. I was in communication with Joel, you know, what else, mate? How else can I make it better for her? And I think opening up the communication with Joel helped me to understand how I could help Anya.
Yeah.
And then having that relationship with Anya to be able to give her that advice and she take it. So, and you know what? She's another one through to get a gold. I was ecstatic.
That is
a massive story in Australian boxing.
Because everyone wrote her off, really, didn't they? Let's be honest.
Totally.
You were mad if you thought she would have won the gold after having a full knee reconstruction.
Totally, totally. But she just came back with a vengeance. And that says a lot for her personality as well.
Mm.
She is a very strong-minded and strong-willed woman.
Yeah.
So that's probably like the most successful Commonwealth Games team with like, what, Skye, Anya, Kay Scott,
yep.
Taylor,
Caitlin Parker,
Harry
yep.
Garson,
yeah.
Jason Watley. So that's what? That's. Oh, Caitlin. Oh, yeah. So that's
Caitlin
like
Parker,
maybe
yeah.
eight medals. That's,
yep.
that's an amazing achievement.
Yep.
And how good to be at home, too.
Yeah, and the fact it was here.
Yeah.
So moving into the next Olympics, do you think that'll put us in good stead with those kind of athletes?
Yeah, trial? Definitely. Look, Australia has a good crop of elites and youths. And I think these next Aussie titles and then the retrials for Olympic Games, it's going to be tight. It's going to be tough. But, you know, you've got the team over there who are travelling at the moment. They're in Poland at the moment.
Yeah,
about
they seem to be getting some good results over
yeah.
there too, which is
they're about. I think they're in competition here today or tomorrow. But
is that Poland or is it?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're gaining the experience, and look, that's what we need to be subjected to, that, you know, there's a difference between being an Australian title winner and being a winner internationally.
In a
there's a massive difference. Like,
I guess we haven't seen winners like that since maybe Damien was
Stamping their mark overseas.
Yeah, and then
like
he came back, came back here, and no one would touch him. Yeah, so I think we're kind of seeing that wave as well. There's just complete standouts in some divisions.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And that too, he's got a lot. Like, Damien just was ruthless.
And do you think that comes with exposure as well? Going to other countries or...
Being ruthless or getting...
No, getting to come back home.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Come back home and win.
Yeah,
do you think that's a confidence thing and developing
I think it depends on the personality. When you got someone like Damien Hooper, he just couldn't give a fuck about anyone.
We know that.
Like, he just... 100%. I still remember the story.
Winner's attitude. 100% winner's attitude.
I still remember the story, and I remember Don Abnett telling us when he had that broken hand or arm in
is that in, what he, yeah, I've where, heard the story, yeah.
I can't remember who he was boxing. And he came back and said, "Coach my arm," and he said, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "I fucking beat him with one hand." And you know what? That's what makes winners.
Yeah.
That heart, that dog.
I won't be beaten, yeah.
Yeah, that and you know, because he had something to fight for. He wanted to change, and he had something to fight for, and he had something to prove.
Yeah.
And so the different personality. So he had great exposure, and he took advantage of it. Some people might have great exposure, but they crumble because they're not quite all there with it. Their heart's not there, or they don't have that dog.
Well, that self-belief.
Yeah.
That's one thing that Damien's has always had.
Yeah, that.
Talk about Damien, obviously, because he's, you know, close to us and everything. But, look, there's others, like the Maloney boys, you know what I mean? Like Andrew and Jason. Mate, they were amazing when they were... I remember when they were amateur boxers and they were starting out. I remember I was in the corner of Andrew at a sparring... I don't know, some sparring event down the AIS. And I just thought they were... perfect young men, very respectful, but had self-belief in their own right. Different characters to Damien, but still had that massive self-belief. And look, well, just, if you back yourself, you're a chance, aren't you?
Well,
you
look, know? It just comes back to that dream ball with Shelley Watts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't believe, well,
it ain't gonna happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's good that we've got quite a few new coaches, like, coming back into the game too, like former Olympians. Like, we've got Jamie Pittman doing good things now, and also Todd Kidd. There's probably others that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but obviously because, you know, we know those guys quite well. It's good to see Todd and Jamie and, you know, people that have been around and had their own Olympic cycles getting involved. It'd be great to see somebody like Shelley or some females that, you know, that have been there getting back into the sport. Obviously, they've got their own lives to live. Maybe later on it might come back. But it'd be good for those girls, the females, to come back and, you know, give back when their time's right, you know, to the sport, whether it's mentoring or coaching. It don't have to be physical coaching, but just mentoring and talking to young girls that there's an opportunity there if you want, you know, like you take it.
Oh, look,
I think girls,
you can get that inspiration as an athlete.
Yeah.
I found there was one year, remember when we went to state and it was up the coast at Paradise Point and Brad Hall came along just as like a mentor for the young boys because I think we had a couple of the boys from Gladstone but passed.
Yeah, that's right.
And he just came in and he wasn't boxing, wasn't coaching, but he was just there for us and understood our journey as an athlete because he'd been through it before. I think that'd be a really positive thing for the girls as well to have. She understands the struggles we go through with making weight and all the like judges' decisions or not things not going your way, not performing on the day. And like to have someone like as a mentor would be good, I think.
Being mentor, like everybody needs somebody to look up to. And you bring back, you know, I think that'd be vital for Boxing Australia to do something like
just
it.
Like a couple representatives just to help people.
Shelley,
out.
Yeah. Kay Scott. I don't know, some people that have done some good things in the sport. You know, let's have a junior camp and have these girls just come and have a chat with them or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think that's a really big thing because we've all been in our lives starstruck at some point. You know what I mean? You've always looked up to some, whether it was when you were a kid or whatever. You're, oh, that's so and so, you know, and you know, do they you, help you.
It's like when strive. You look up to me.
It's not. I actually look down on you because you're a midget.
I just wanted to, you know, we were talking before about boxers getting exposure overseas, and obviously you've travelled a fair bit with the boxing. What's probably, like, as far as female amateur boxing, who's the best country or maybe best system, strongest, coaching system you've coaching come across? System, as
yeah,
a,
nice.
Mate.
Coaching system. I like what GB does, but they've got the cash to roll with.
Yeah.
And this
you get
is,
the cash when you win Olympic medals. Though.
Yeah. And
but you don't get them car. Unless you get.
That's right. Yeah, it's catch 22.
It's really tough, Jacko, to answer that because Australia is such a widespread nation. So we've got, you know, to travel to Perth, it takes us 6 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, GB, they're local. They can come in for, I don't know, I think it's 5 days a week, go home for three or whatever it is.
And
so,
Europe's so central too.
Yeah. Like so Germany. That's
an
right.
An hour on the plane, they're in Spain. Yeah. You know, like.
So that's the issue with Australia. Because it's so vast, it's hard to actually go, well, this is what we're going to do and this is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a trial and error for Australia because we're so different. But I do think the, you know, like you've got a lot to do with QAS. I think the academies have to step up a little bit and the actual states have to step up a little bit and run their own things.
Like their own institutes as well.
Yeah. And
not just Canberra.
Yeah, that's right. Don't lay all the blamers on Boxing Australia and the institute. You know, there's nothing stopping people, athletes going out and getting their own strength and conditioning coach and saying, hey, this is, I'm a boxer, this is what I do, how can you help me?
Yeah.
You know, it takes a little bit of initiative too from the athletes as well.
Yeah, see, I haven't had to use that initiative because you guys are on top of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, for other athletes, that's probably good advice, I think, is, oh, I'm not getting strength training. Well, you go out and you chase it.
Yeah.
If you want it that bad, you'll make it happen,
won't
you?
Yeah, or you'll find some way to do it.
The YouTube is full of videos right now. I'm sure you'll find something on there, you know, worst case scenario, you know.
And like they say that boxing, you know, oh, I don't have money, don't have this. Well, I don't take excuses really easily. Like you said, you've got YouTube, you've got this, you've got, if you really want something, you find a way.
Yeah.
Like you don't, if you put an excuse in the way of it, well, you don't really want it. Yeah. That's how I see it. You just find the way, whether it's, you know, I can't afford it. Well, you look on YouTube and then you put it into your diary and 3 days a week I'm going to do this strength program and, you know, you learn yourself about your own
then
sport.
Then you pave your own way.
Yeah. Yep.
I suppose, anything else, Jacko? Anything else to touch on?
Yeah, I just love how every time you've gone overseas and come back, you've always brought knowledge and brought it back to the grassroots, which is back to your gym. And I just wanted to touch on that. So what's maybe some more of the maybe tactics or things you use in the corner that you've learnt overseas? Because I know I spoke to Gareth about his strategies and he spoke about, you know, Hooper and what he used to do with his athletes, but maybe a bit into your philosophy on corner work and
anything
into that. Yeah, what you've picked up from other people.
Well, in all honesty, I learnt the whole breathing thing off Gareth. So,
shout out Gareth Williams.
Yeah, shout out Gareth Williams. I stole that one too.
Who's your favourite coach of all time and why am I?
Oh, look, to be honest, he was the first coach in boxing I've ever had. Well, first and last, but. And what I learn off him, I still use now. Everything, like from warm-ups to whatever.
Yeah.
But I think when I travelled overseas, I was subjected to see so many different ways in doing things. But I do remember Kevin Smith saying to me, it's pretty simple. Yeah. It's hit and not be hit.
Yeah.
And I'm going, yeah. It's
when you break
humans
it
confuse
like
boxing.
Oh, mate, for sure.
You know what I mean? punch them and make them not punch you.
Yeah.
It's really simple.
And that's... And that philosophy is actually stuck in my head a lot.
It's simple.
Yeah, yeah, because... I might
take something away from this.
Make
sure you go and have a listen to this when you're done.
Look, and that's what I do when I'm watching. If I'm cornering, I'm watching it and I'm just thinking, I just need to keep it simple. Pick one thing that I can see.
Yeah.
I can tell the athlete in the corner. And it's just basic stuff. It might be his or her lead hand comes down low. Bring the overhand right.
Yeah.
And then step back.
The opportunities, yeah.
There's, and, you know, also, it's saying that, but when they get back to the corner, I like to say, what are you seeing? Because I could be seeing a totally different thing to what my box is seeing, and I'm interpreting different to what they're interpreting. Mm. So if they say, well, I can see this, I go, great, that's what I'm seeing. Mm. And then you can give your advice from that. But I always remember what Gareth taught me is positive, negative, positive.
Yeah.
Give them a positive, give them that negative, and then send them out with a massive positive and let them go.
Mm.
And so it's really simple in the corner. It's pretty basic. Yeah.
Even you just saying that now, I can see that because you've cornered me for a lot of the state trials, and every time we go on, like we're going to Darwin this week, you'll be in the corner, and yeah, I can even see that now. It's deep breath, calm. What are you seeing?
Yeah,
yeah. I'm getting bashed up, Shara.
And you know, and you know,
do you have a towel?
No, I usually go. Did I win that round? And she'll go, yeah, but this is what you're going to do.
Oh, and look, when you go overseas, you see. Look, I've seen some weird stuff.
Anyone get slapped?
Yes.
In the corner? Yeah.
I have seen.
You like that? Don't like, try that white axe.
Oh.
No, I don't go slapping. I think I might have done once, but anyway.
I've just seen the most bizarrest, forms of boxing. The way people box. I remember seeing this one girl. I can't remember what country it was, but she was on her tippy toes, and it was just. She was doing a mundane, just little shots, pop up, pop up, pop up, pop up, and there was no, and she actually boxed like that, because I made a point of watching her, and I was like, and she won, and I was like,
well, it worked.
It works.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because you know what? Maybe she can't extend with her hip, or you know, you've got to work.
Well,
you've got to work with the biomechanics of what your athlete can do.
Yeah.
Not everyone's built like Jack Bowen.
We're not all made of steel.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Like you've got to let you can teach what you know, but you've got to let the flair of that boxer develop as
we've
well.
We've had this conversation before, I think.
Yeah,
about
the young kids coming through.
Yeah, and about me or even myself, because I think when I first started in the elite. I'd get really like flary because I love the show and the entertainment side, and so I'd be like, "Yes, you're doing that well." But you need to do the fundamentals right.
Yeah.
And then I'd get too basic.
Yeah.
And then she goes, you need to add your flair, but not too much. So, like, I think it's finding that balance as well.
And
doing your own thing as an athlete and then balancing it with what your coach wants.
Yeah, that's right.
I think, look, like, take, for example, the Indigenous. They are so talented, right?
Coordinated.
And coordinate everything right? If an Indigenous kid walks into your gym and he can... Do just stuff that you'd teach you, like that by himself. You don't change it. You just add to it, and he has his own flair then, or his or own flair then, and then that's what produces something that is totally different the European style boxing.
But some people, that is their flair. It might be, I can throw 10 fast, hard punches really fast. Yeah. Like, that might be their flair. And then I guess you've got to work with that.
Well, it's like you have some boxers that are great on their feet and some that are just flat-footed that, you know, you have to change to their ability.
The style, that's right.
And I guess that comes back to what you were talking about and Gareth was talking about with Paul and Ian teaching into those... Yes, you're doing everything right, but you've got to learn the fundamentals and this is, you're going to practice
have
this
a good base.
10 or 30 fights.
I think it's a massive thing. If you don't have basics, what do you go back to and about?
Yeah, when you're struggling,
when you're struggling and you're under pressure.
You go back to bad mistakes, don't you?
Yeah, you don't want to just drop your hands.
Yeah, so your basics always come through and that will get you through, whether they make you win about or just get you through. They have to be there.
It doesn't always have to be pretty as long as you get the win, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to finish this off on a bit of a comical story. I'm just going to say, and you have to continue this conversation, Shara.
Now you're in trouble.
About 4 years ago, Sky Olive.
Oh.
Come on, you got to tell us what happened.
Was that as bad as getting hit by a motorbike in the Philippines?
There's been a few stories.
There was one time, I think I was about 15 or 16, and Shara was in the corner with us, and she put my mouth guard back in, but didn't hook. I thought her finger was out, and I nearly bit her finger off.
Mate, I tell you what.
Come on, Sky Olive, it was a cracker.
And she didn't have a go at me either because she knew I was fighting. Yeah. I got away with it for about 15 minutes.
Nearly bit my finger off, the young fella. Well, anyway, I had Sky Olive.
She's now a coach.
She's now one of our... She's now 17. I think she was about 10 or 11 when this happened. Anyway, I was pushing her in this fight. And she was winning, and she won. She comes back to the corner, I'm taking her gloves off.
Well done.
And bam, spews straight on my face.
Was that the first and last time, though?
Yes, but not like just a little bit. I'm talking a power spew.
I'm talking three Yatla pies. It was huge.
So I'm standing there, and I could smell it. And Gareth goes, Shara, what are you doing? I just stood there like, what the...
She froze.
Shara, what are you doing? And then I smelt it and I started gagging. I ran to the toilet. I was gagging because I could smell spew.
It was all over your face.
It was all down
your hair, on your
top. Down my top, everything.
Yeah, but you couldn't be mad at her. She won the fight.
Oh, she won.
I remember.
So
Pat Nicholson was judging and I looked at Pat and she was dry reaching because of what she'd just seen. It was everybody in there just went, oh my God, what the fuck has just happened?
No, but I've got to say, that's not one of the worst experiences. My worst experience was being hit by a motorbike in the Philippines. That was...
Who were you with at that time? You were just about to go to sparring? You just had a coffee with Taylor?
Yeah, so
Taylor and...
Oh, I can't even remember. Sky. No, Jess and Ella.
Yeah, that's right.
Ella were there. The rest of the girls... We said, we'll come over.
We were at the fights when we it were. Because I got a message saying that Shara just got hit by
and
a
I was in, and I was like, in the ring with Dan what Moore. What's she doing? And I just got, hands on the phone, I'm going, shut up, I've got to fucking... But Dan Moore's in the ring.
I got a message and I was like, Gareth, I think Shara's been hit by a motorbike. Yeah. He's like, well, checked his phone and...
It was, to this day, I don't know how I survived that.
Do you remember any of it?
So I was walking with our physio across the road. And I checked, like, it was a crossing. So we just finished having a coffee and we're going to sparring. It's like, oh, yeah, ready to go. And I checked, all the traffic had stopped. So we're walking across the road. And that's all I remember. And then I woke up and I got up on my feet and I was like, oh, we're going to go to sparring. And everyone was like, Shara, you dickhead. You've just been cleaned up by a motorbike. I was like, what? Anyway, I was standing there, mate. And I was going, Shara, remember what you just did? And I couldn't remember what I'd done. I was like, oh, shit. Anyway, they called the ambulance and everything, take me over to the hospital.
Yeah.
And I was out of it, like...
And this is in the Philippines,
Philippines. Yeah. Right? I'd cut down my head, down my leg. And I get to the hospital, they put me in this small room with seven other doctors and they're all speaking Filipino and I'm like just sitting there and I was still concussed, like freaking out. And one of the doctors comes up and says, oh yes, we're just gonna put peroxide on your wounds, straight peroxide. So they put it on, I hit the roof and I was like, ah! They're all over and... I think I was there for about 4 hours straight up. And that's when they were trying to ring Gareth. Ringing and he wouldn't pick up. And I said, usual Gareth. Never picks up his phone, does he, Jacko?
Yeah, just for everyone listening, Gareth's really hard to get hold of.
Yeah. So don't worry, even it's not it, just you, it's me as personal. Well. Yeah, it's not
mate,
personal.
Because I'm fucking busy, oh, mate.
Watching IFL TV.
Yeah. Eddie so Hunter. Anyway.
Cassius, hashtag.
So anyway, they get hold of him, and I get on the phone and said, I'm coming home now. And he's going, what's happened? I was like, I got hit by a motorbike. I'm coming home now. And he's going, Shara, you can't fly. I said, no, I'm book me a ticket now. I'm coming home. And he's like, no, you need to calm down. You need to stay a couple of days.
I had to clean the house up for 3 days. That's why I didn't really want you home. That's all.
And like, parties. So they went and did x-rays. And absolutely nothing was broken. I'd had a look at old mate. He's come off his motorbike, all down the side of his mouth has split open. He's got stitches. And they're saying to me, oh, do you want to press charges? I was like, no, I just want to get out. Want to get out of here. And so I had to spend 2 days in camp, not moving, and then I was able to fly home. But the girls were distraught. Like, and I remember Ella was just screaming on the other side of the road because they all thought I was actually dead.
Yeah.
Like, because wow. I did a 360 and fell straight on the floor.
Yeah, Jess was really supportive, wasn't she? Well, yeah. Jess Radelick and Ella. So, the physio, what was the physio's name? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And so apparently the bike was going 60 k's per hour.
Wow.
And clean me up.
Hold you over.
Bowled me over. So that I got home, and look, in all honesty, even going into camp for that Tri-Nation camp, I probably wasn't still all there. It was tough for me to get on the hand pads. I was told not to do any hand pads or
You would have been cooked
or anything for a good 6 weeks afterwards. But
you were even struggling crossing the road at one stage, mentally. Like, thinking,
I still do now. There's no way I would. I can't cross without thinking about
looking all the
being
time.
Here. Yeah, for sure.
Nice. All right. Well, I think wraps up episode 3. I think all the listeners will be quite impressed. And if anyone's got any questions, fire them in. Send them in. This will be released on Friday. We had to do this episode on the Monday due to Jack and Kendall and Shara flying out to Darwin for the Arafura game. So good luck over there, Jack.
Thanks, mate.
And we'll get stuck into it next week. Thank you very much, Shara.
Thank you. Thanks, boys. You.